159.
Accept the annual report from the Age-Friendly Portland Initiative.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very pleased today to kick off a year two progress report from our friends at Age-Friendly Portland. And just by way of background, in 2013, the City Council accepted an action plan for an age-friendly city. And that action plan contained 10 different areas of focus. And we have officially designated Age-Friendly Portland as our partner in implementing a number of those recommendations. And this, of course, all flows from a very proud decision a number of years ago of the World Health Organization to give us a very special designation as an age-friendly city. This is the second year progress report coming to council. I was going to introduce Alan Del Torre, but he's
he's still here.
Sweet talking our clerk. Alan, if you could just join us for 1 second.
Yes, absolutely.
Alan is going to introduce the panel, and we've set aside 30 minutes for a brief overview. And also, let me just say at the beginning, deeply appreciate Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Hales for their support, and my council colleagues for the funding in our last budget. This is not just any group. This is actually our officially designated age-friendly partner. And so we're very proud of that relationship. And this year we made an investment in housing for older adults and accessibility. And we look forward to the fruits of that work. But today we're going to get year two report. Alan, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. And I'd like to say that as of yesterday afternoon, we finally executed the contract. It took only a month and a half. Sometimes there's red tape between governmental organizations, but it's on the books now, both at Portland State. I'd like to introduce the presenters today. To my right, Barbara Bernstein, the Executive Director of Elders in Action, Margaret Neal, who's the Director of the Institute on Aging at Portland State University, and Vandana Shrestha, who's a jack-of-all-trades with AARP Oregon. She does a lot of different things with the group, and we'll turn it over to Margaret to get started, although the reason I was at the clerk's desk was we're waiting for the presentation to be populated. I don't know if it's ready to go just
yet. He's sending it around. Okay. It'll be a minute.
We'll go forward without it. So we are very pleased to be here at this time to report on our last year's work with the Age-Friendly Portland Advisory Council and the Age-Friendly Portland Initiative. It began back in 2006 as a part of a research project with the World Health Organization, and we've been working since that time on making our community more age-friendly with a variety of partners. And the effort is organized through an age-friendly advisory council with our key partners, Elders in Action, AARP Oregon, and a number of other partners who make this all work together. The Institute on Aging is serving the role as a backbone organization, striving for collective impact, but that requires one organization at least to pull all the pieces together, and that really has been our role. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, the council approved the action plan for an age-friendly Portland back in 2013, and there are 10 domains of action in that action plan. They include housing, transportation, outdoor spaces, and buildings. Those comprise their sort of built environment piece of making a community age-friendly. Then we have social participation, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and employment, communication and information, and community support and health services. Now, if you were counting, that was only 8. In our effort here in Portland, we pulled apart civic participation and employment so that we could focus on employment and economic development and have a special focus on that in our community. And also we pulled apart health services and community services because they were such big domains and we wanted to be able to focus on those independently. So our council decided that we couldn't act on all of those domains at the same time. So in 2014, we identified 3 priority areas: civic engagement, employment and the economy, and housing. And then in 2015, we added 2 more, health services prevention and equity. It used to be just called health services, and transportation. Thank you. And so the key accomplishments that we've had, thank you very much, in the last year fall into three general areas. One is governance. One is providing education and raising awareness. And another is in the area of policy development. And each of those areas touch the different domains that we've identified as a council to work on. So highlighting some of the highlights with respect to governance, in October of 2014, Multnomah County decided to join the age-friendly movement. And its board of county commissioners made a resolution to adopt the same areas of action as Portland had adopted, and then to work on developing its own action plan. They also agreed to have our age-friendly Portland Advisory Council serve as the council, the advisory council to the Multnomah County effort. So one of the things we did as a council is change the name of the advisory council to the Age-Friendly Advisory Council of Portland and Multnomah County. Another thing that we did that was very important, and I believe it was your suggestion that we do this, Vandana, as an advisory council member, we adopted a charter. And so we spent some time working through the various elements of how we wanted to govern this initiative, and we set that forth in writing, and that's an appendix in the report that you have. The next example of an accomplishment within the education and raising awareness issue area is the Aging Well Conference that we had at Oregon Health and Science University with all of our partners on October 3rd. There were about 140 people there, and it was targeted to consumers and community members. We had sessions on housing, on brain health, on volunteering, physical activity, nutrition, end-of-life care, and county-based resources for adults. So it was a pretty broad-reaching effort. And at the end of it, we all took a walk across the Telecom Bridge, which was lovely. We had another event in October called What Are Old People For? This was our sort of follow-up event to the first annual event. This time it was held at Warner Pacific College, and Commissioner Fish served as the Master of Ceremonies for that event. It was keynoted by a woman named Dr. Janet Taylor, who's a community psychiatrist in New York City, very well-known individual, and talked a lot about equity and about the value of older adults and the contributions that they make to our community. And we have planning underway right now for a 2016 event in the fall that'll be focused on intergenerational opportunities for engaging younger and older adults together. Another awareness-raising effort that we engaged in was actually conducted with funding from Grantmakers in Aging. And what we did is we developed a case for age-friendly communities. This case statement will be released, I believe, next week. We have the proofs for it right now. And this was really prepared as a document that would pull together the existing research that pertains to why we should bother creating age-friendly communities. And it looked across all the domains that we mentioned and presented that research evidence. It has something like 300 footnotes. So it's very well documented, and it focuses on the following areas: the economic benefits of age-friendly communities, the social capital benefits in terms of older adults who volunteer, as well as who make charitable contributions, the opportunities related to housing, opportunities related to physical infrastructure, the health benefits, not just for older adults, but for people of all ages and abilities, for having a community that works, and a variety of other benefits. And then another area in which our council made contributions was with respect to the city's comprehensive plan. The advisory council members reviewed the plan. We submitted verbal and written testimony, worked with community partners to provide additional input. Dr. De La Torre was selected to participate as a policy expert in the policy expert group on neighborhood centers. And he's also a member of the Residential Infill Project to assist in addressing aging and accessibility issues in housing. I'll turn it over to you, Barbara, now.
Thank you. Elders in Action comes to the Age-Friendly Portland collaboration through the commitment of the City of Portland to civic engagement. We really appreciate your support and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. In addition to being an active member of the Age-Friendly Advisory Council and assisting in joint projects, the Age-Friendly projects that you talked about, our programs also fit in within the domains of the age-friendly cities. So we prioritize our programs based on the issues of most concern to older adults that we hear from every day. We hear from about 3,000 older adults in our community. And the four areas of major concern right now are housing, not a surprise, I suppose, affordable housing, identity theft, scams, and fraud, transportation, and isolation and neglect. And the first slide you see here is one of our responses to the identity theft, scams, and fraud issue. We are collaborating with the Oregon Department of Justice, APS, and local law enforcement to create fraud panels that you see there. And Commissioner Fish participated in one. Thank you very much. The audience is about 40 to 50 people, and they're there, and they get to talk to their service providers directly, hear about resources of support, and to learn about prevention to those issues. The next slide shows a group of older adults headed down to Salem to advocate for affordable housing. In response to the number of calls that we're getting from older adults who are being priced out of their homes and can't afford the large rent increases or experiencing no-cause evictions, we decided that we wanted to educate ourselves about how to be better advocates for this. And so we created a session to help older adults be their best advocates. So those who had experienced housing insecurity. And then we created a partnership with REACH, Home Forward, the Urban League, Fair Housing Council, Oregon Opportunity Network, Northwest Pilot Project, to put together a series in which we could become better housing advocates. And this included that trip to Salem that you see there, and also participating in the Fair Housing Council's discrimination tour, which gave us a little bit of a historical perspective on the issues facing us today. The next slide shows, that was one of the activities too, one of our volunteers. This one is the opening of the Orange Line. So we participate in those community events also, but that represents our commitment to transportation issues. And as an example, we work with Ride Connection to recruit volunteers for their rideshare program, and that teaches older adults to navigate and use the public transportation system when their own individual transportation systems, or when they can't drive anymore, essentially. The next slide is, again, the housing project. That's the bus tour there. We had about 50 people participate in that event. And then finally, I think, this is the age-friendly business certification program, which most of you probably know about. This started as a program by Elders in Action volunteers who felt themselves becoming invisible to their own community. So they created a program that educates businesses about how to serve and create friendly environments for the older adults so they can continue to participate in their communities. This reduces the impact of social isolation on the individual and the community. And it's a great way to engage older adults in creating the kinds of communities they want to live in. In 2013, we started to do this program a little bit differently, and we're engaging business districts. So we have engaged the Hillsdale Business District, Lloyd District Center, the mall, and the district. And we train a group of volunteers and then go out to a group of businesses. And then together, they are talking about best practices about how to serve the older adult. And we're using this system, to do the 19 libraries in the Multnomah County Library System. So they, instead of us going in, our volunteers going in and doing the certification process, they're recruiting their own volunteers, and then they have champions within their system to continue to promote age-friendly activities. The library is already great, but it's been a really important and engaging conversation to have.
What were some of the findings, some of the most common things that people could improve?
Well, each library is a little bit different. So, for instance, Selwood, they've moved their hold, little things like this. So they've moved their hold shelves to the back of the library, and you have to go down a very narrow kind of hallway that they've created. It used to be at the front of the library, so that has challenges for people with disability and just kind of those kinds of things. So that sort of thing. The library already has great programs. They're reaching out to older adults. They're delivering books. Their service is really very good. But those kinds of individual libraries might have had things like that.
And what were some of the things in the businesses that people should be thinking about but don't?
Thank you for asking. Well, benches in places of business. That's a way for anybody who to rest, you know, to be there, to not have to stand while they're waiting. So that might be one thing. Signage was a big thing. We did Providence, a Providence hospital, and the signage was really very confusing. The facilities management people had already identified these problems, but it wasn't it until the volunteers came in to advocate for that the administration took notice. So I think having advocates of people in the community saying the things that maybe we already know but haven't the will to make change helps those things change.
It's terrific to have your volunteers, because both of those examples are things that everybody can use a bench to sit down on when they're tired of waiting for whoever's shopping, and everybody can use better signage. So the fact that your volunteers are out there and are respected and doing this certification is a great example of how making everything more accessible makes it more accessible for everybody.
Thank you. And you will be really happy that it's now called Age-Friendly Program instead of the Elder-Friendly Program because of that very thing.
Yeah.
So that, I think we also did the evaluation of the new customer, new water customer flyer. And I think in 2016, we have a really great opportunity to continue to do the work that is a collaboration between theory, policy, and practice.
Can I just put a little plug in on that?
Sure.
Mayor, I hope it's something we can each year bring all the bureaus into this conversation. We had a brochure at the Water Bureau that outlined discount programs, and it was small print, was a small document, and it was very hard to read. And so we showed it to our friends at Elders in Action and said, could you help us recast this so that it's more accessible to older adults? And they said, well, the font is wrong, the layout's wrong, it's unfriendly.
Said it more diplomatically, I hope.
Right, and we got a whole list of things, so we redid it. And we submitted it, and we got back another 2 pages of single space. And like one of the comments they made was, there's like 6 or 7 phone numbers on the brochure. And if you're an older adult and maybe not, you don't read as well and you're confused about how to interact with government, 6 or 7 numbers just makes it harder. So where's the one number, the one person that's accountable? And also, we had some disclaimers about do's and don'ts, and it was deemed to be off-putting because the disclaimers were positioned in such a way that it looked like we were making accusations rather than saying, you know, fair warning, you know, these are some lines. And so we redid it. We increased the size by 50%, which is a modest cost factor, blew up the font, and we've gotten a great response from it. And frankly, without their input, it wasn't clear to me all the ways in which it fell short. And I hope it's a resource that we can all use, because a lot of our most, you know, a lot of the customers that we're serving are older adults, and many of them have the same issues, including vision. And we have to be responsive to them. And so I can't thank you enough. It actually changed my thinking about a lot of things.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, there is one more picture. But that's it. I'm done.
I have just a few slides. Again, I'm Vandana Shrestha with ARB Oregon, and it's just a great pleasure to be here. And I want to start by saying thank you so much for having us come back and do this report. It's great to have leadership and commitment from the City Council, from the Mayor, and Commissioner Nick. Fish. Commissioner Fish, your leadership has been great and great support to the work that we're trying to do collectively. And I think there was a slide that Margaret had which talked about collective impact, which is that, you know, we together as a community of partners, of stakeholders, of advocate groups, we're working together to really work towards making our city age-friendly. And I think it was, you said it right, it's not just about, you know, one specific group. It really is about age-friendly for all ages, even though we start with older adults, maybe because we are AARP, for instance, or Elders in Action, or because we're Institute on Aging. But I think the work we're trying to do is really about creating sustainable communities. And I don't think I need to say that much, but I think what we have seen is that the shared interest between what we are advocating for, because we think it's going to be good for people 50-plus, and what we see, you know, we share interests with lots of other groups who are also thinking about their constituents. For AARP, our interests are very similar to what Elders in Action is, but I'll tell you a little bit about our connection to the work that's going on also around the state. Because we are AARP, we're championing age-friendly communities and the network of age-friendly communities around the country. Margaret mentioned the WHO, and obviously Oregon, and especially Portland, has been doing this work since 2006. And we, as AARP, have been very proud to be a partner and supporter of that work. But a few years, about 6 years, or what, 4 or 5 years ago, AARP nationally became an affiliate affiliated with WHO and the Age Friendly Global Network, and, you know, is now really championing the Age Friendly National Network. And when it began, there were only 7 communities, and Portland was, of course, one of them. And now it's grown to 75 communities around the state, And, you know, they represent cities mid-sized like ours to large metros from New York to L.A. to really small towns and variety of communities around the states. And I think that just speaks to the good work that has begun in Portland and how others are learning from it. So I think we have a lot to be proud about. And even in this past year, I know for AARP, we've been very pleased to be part of a cohort of organizations and advocates being able to do certain new things. For instance, we launched our Neighbor Walks program, which we're really thrilled about. The folks at PBOT Active Transportation have been great supporters of that. We have volunteers running this walk program. We have had over 500 people participate. We're also doing other things related to advocacy around housing, for instance, speaking up both at local levels as well as statewide, you know, for instance, at the inclusionary zoning. But we continue to also, just like Barbara said, and I think Margaret also mentioned, you know, there are different ways of trying to do this work. And for us, it means advocacy. So we are making sure our volunteers and our 65,000 member strength is heard at City Hall and as well as at the state level when we try to advocate for the age-friendly policies like safe streets and good, you know, sound funding on resources that are going to make sure that people are able to age successfully. So we appreciate your support and thank you. I think I have a couple more pictures. Let's see. This is a good one. Of various activities, and the first one is there with Commissioner Fish at our Vital Aging Conference doing a really great keynote for our attendees. There were about 220 people, and the bottom one is a walk, the Neighbor Walks. It was our first walk in Irvington, and I think we had 100 people show up, which was a shock, but it's been a great success, and it just shows that older adults really want to engage in that community.
You have 65,000 members here in Portland?
Yes.
And what's the age? How old do you have to be eligible? Or how old or young do you have to be eligible?
You can be a member at any age, but the full-fledged members, you know, you can be 50 to get lots of benefits and stuff, which we as the nonprofit arm aren't responsible for.
So 50 and above.
Yes. But our members are really of all ages. You can be a member at all ages because what we do is, you know, driven by our mission to make sure that people can age with dignity. And, you know, aging begins when you're born. So if we go by that and not just the benefits and discounts, you can be a member at any age. So I think that's about it. And, oh, the last one is, you know, we were really pleased to do the first. We partnered with Elders in Action and with support from the council to do one of the first Portland mural forum in 2012. And Mayor Hills was part of that, along with two other candidates, and we hope to do the same, and this is the save the date for you all. Please mark your calendars, and we look forward to seeing you then. Thank you.
Are you going to invite all the candidates?
Right now, we have a policy which says we look at certain polling numbers.
So if I might make a request that you consider inviting all the candidates, something that the Columbia Corridor Association found was that by sending a questionnaire to the candidates and asking everybody who sent the questionnaire back, that meant that some people were not willing to put in the time to send the questionnaire back. Okay. So I would suggest that it's hard for candidates who are not well known to get their message out, and that as somebody who has a group that's very inclusive and aware of abilities and disabilities, that something other than polling numbers might be helpful to the democratic process, if you just consider that. Thank you.
Although, Commissioner Fritz, I will say I remember once being on a stage with Josh Alpert and 14 candidates, and I'm not sure it was the most informative forum, but I did get, I think, one question for the evening. But I want to ask you, Charlie, was that an effective forum back in 2020?
It was a very effective forum, so I'm glad you're doing it again, and I want to second Commissioner Fritz's point. In January of 1992, an Oregonian poll showed me at 6%, so I hope the threshold would be lower than that.
Really? That's a fun fact I didn't know, Charlie.
So it just shows how reliable early polls are.
Right. I know. Ours is not until April 2nd, so we have some time.
And we are internationally known now for that candidate forum, because it's featured on the World Health Organization Age-Friendly Globe website.
Yeah, and all I know that all the AARP cities where they are working with, like Texas has done that after us, lots of their communities have done it, so it's a good thing.
You mentioned inclusionary zoning, and we've got a big fight on our hands down in Salem, and it's not quite going the way we would like right now. And I think it's worth remembering that when we talk about people at 0 to 30 of median family income, which sounds very social, you know, sounds very wonky, let's put the human face on that. That's a older adult on SSI, and that's a full-time minimum wage entry-level worker. And if we want a community for people of all ages, we have to have housing for both. Entry-level worker, full-time minimum wage, and an older adult on SSI. And they both need housing at 0 to 30% of median family income. And that's one of the reasons I think everyone up here believes this fight in Salem is very important.
Yes, thank you.
I've got just a couple comments, a couple slides left to talk about where we're heading in 2016 and beyond. And want to note that after I did my math, I think I've been volunteering with AARP since I was 26. So all ages are welcome over there at AARP. So our efforts continue to move forward. We're continuing to implement our action plan from 2013. I'd also like to call out very briefly our SVP social venture partner Encore Fellows who are here with us in the audience, Bill Stack and Shailesh Vachani. If you could raise your hands. They've come to us after careers in Portland Public Schools and Intel to continue to further the efforts with Age-Friendly Portland and Multnomah County, and we're really happy to have them. They've been incredible benefits to the Institute on Aging and to Age-Friendly in general. As Margaret talked about earlier, Multnomah County is ramping up right now to do their baseline assessment and action plan, and I'd say that in the next year to year and a half, we'll see those unveiled. Also, the City of Portland funding is key for us in moving forward, and I'd say that in some ways you could think about it as seed money. So as I move forward in my efforts as a researcher at the Institute on Aging, I now have the ability to look for additional opportunities for funding outside of government funding to, say, nonprofits and to other organizations that are interested in helping us to implement the action plan, and to also look at exciting ways to further research and to even start teaching in intergenerational classroom and community settings. So I'll talk a little bit about the capstone course at Portland State that we're looking to develop. And if you could advance to the next slide. A little bit about the deliverables and the actions that we're taking as part of the 2016 age-friendly efforts that have been funded from the city. We'll now produce quarterly reports on what's happening with the council and the housing committee, which is being revamped at the moment. The second action is to revise our housing action area. We know that some of the actions there in 2013 were good, but they could be improved upon, especially in light of the current crisis and homelessness issues that we're facing in our community. We also want to identify priorities to increase age friendliness in Portland's housing. This is actually not as easy of a lift as I originally thought. There are both regulatory barriers or difficulties in finding regulation to improve age friendliness in housing, and very intricate incentive-based approaches that we may be able to take. But as Mayor Hales knows, the work of the Residential Infill Project Stakeholder Advisory Committee, there are a number of different players and actors at the table, and finding solutions and bargains is much less easy than some of us anticipated early on. The final piece of the revision of this action plan and the summary of priorities for moving age-friendly housing forward is going to need to be vetted and brought back to the council in some ways. So you've adopted the resolution, by resolution, the age-friendly action plan, but these updates need to be passed through you again. We need your commitment to look at these and to give us advice as we move forward. With respect to the residential infill project, I've been a member of that since its inception, and I will write a briefing in June of this year to describe kind of where the affordable and accessible housing opportunities and challenges are emerging. And I want to point to the two images that are on the screens. These are examples of what are known as stacked flat housing. This is something that's on the table as an alternative housing type. Both of these represent a townhome-type development that allows for one single level to be accessible. They're not audacious or hideous. They actually would fit well in the fabric of our communities. And these are examples of ways in which we're able to change through small modifications the way that we're improving Portland's housing stock. And there's support from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee and others to look at these types of solutions. Just to mention very briefly, the age-friendly service learning project that is part of the grant that is essentially underway as of yesterday afternoon. We're working with University Studies, which coordinates Portland State's Capstone program, to develop an age-friendly capstone project where we're taking undergraduates, around 10 to 12 undergraduates, to do specific projects in the community. And we're actually looking for some input. I had a chance to talk to Jamie Dunphy from Commissioner Fish's office and ask, should we do this as a one or a two-term project? How much do we integrate students into the research project? Do we train them to become junior researchers in some way? And then who are we engaging in the process? Are neighborhood associations a priority? Are business associations a priority? How does our age-friendly network and our age-friendly advisory council play an important role in the work that we're doing? And finally, what's the final product that we're creating, and how is that useful to the bureaus and offices, elected officials and policymakers in this city? And so we want your input. We're looking forward to engaging with you and trying to create the best possible outcomes from these projects. And I want to leave.
Alan, can I just give you a preview?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
The mayor a number of months ago had a group of students come in from a high school. They were doing a project around, designing the city or something. And I think at a minimum we're going to want to talk to you about a time certain in the future that where we could have a council presentation. If the students are going to be working on developing this project, we're going to want to hear them, I think, in this room.
That'll make some excited and some very nervous, but I'm sure that's a possibility. We're actually being asked by the university to winnow down where our deliverables are going to be focused and who our core partners are. And I think we may end up having our core partner be the Age-Friendly Advisory Council, with the deliverables coming to the city specifically to try and inform your work. Thank you for the recommendation, and I'd be very excited to bring the students here. I want to leave with a quote from this publication that Margaret talked about earlier, The Case for Age-Friendly Communities. What we do now to make our communities good places to grow up and grow old will yield returns not only for today's elders, but also tomorrow's. That is all of us. And I think the work underscores the fact that this is for all ages and all abilities, and we very much appreciate the support from the city, from you as council, and from the partners in the community. So we hope we have a little bit of time for either comments or questions.
Questions for this great panel. Thank you very much. Great presentation. So keep it up, because between the comp plan and the rest of the work that you're doing and the infill project, there's a lot that will make a difference in people's lives, and just the way you described at the end there. Get it right the first time, and it lasts for a long time. So. Thank you. Other questions, comments for this group? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to speak about this report?
I have two people signed up, Gabriel Vaught and Sean Davis.
And Mr. Walsh, come on up. Oh, thank you. Come on up, please.
I have to wait.
Oh. No,
I'm dizzy. Go.
Who else, sir? Did you say three, Carl?
Two, and then Mr. Walsh here.
Two others.
Gabriel and Sean Davis.
Sean Davis isn't here yet. Oh, all right.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I'm a little dizzy, so that's why the hesitation. One of the things I thought of during the presentation was that because of my dizzy spells, I don't drive anymore. So I ride the TriMet and the Max a lot. And one of the things that you'll notice on TriMet is they do a great job with wheelchairs. The bus drivers are very sensitive. They stop the bus, they lower the bus, they get out, they help. But that's it. When people get on with walkers and they're in their 70s and 80s, the bus driver doesn't even get out of the seat. And I often wondered why. They don't lower the ramp. The person is struggling to get the walker up. Even when you lower the bus, you still have an area of maybe 12 inches because I have my little oxygen that I lift up. So the question is, do they have a policy in TriMet that says lower the ramp for wheelchairs, but what about the walkers? Now, I'm not interested in the shopping carts that all the people bring on because I think that's not necessary. The walkers are. They are medically necessary. So it seems to me that Elders in Action and AARP, which are very powerful organizations, send a note to TriMet, say, what's your policy on this? And if you don't have a policy on walkers, get one. Because they should lower the ramps, let those people on with their walkers so they don't struggle. And if you watch them, they struggle. And I'm saying to myself, why do we do that? Now, TriMet has not responded to me personally, but I think they would with AARP if they wrote them a note. And I'm a member of AARP. So that's that. The other thing is, I am a true believer that if you want to fight a fire, you ask a fireman. And if you want to know about what older people need, you find people in their 80s, 70s, 60s, say, what is it you need? I like to see older people sitting at this desk. Now, I'm not going to get into the ages of the people that were sitting here, but they really look good if they're 80. And I suspect that AARP, and I've been a member since I was 50, or 55, I think it was when I joined. Go older. Because 70 is totally, I rode my bike when I was 60. So I'm going to be 74. It's very, very different in the 70s. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, which bus lines do you generally ride?
Pardon?
What number buses do you usually ride?
I ride the 4 bus and the 14. If the 4 bus is very crowded, then I switch off to the 14. Those are the two main buses. But I notice that when I go to meetings and I ride the 70 bus, 72 bus, other buses, it's the same thing. The bus drivers are very sensitive to wheelchairs, and I praise them for that. But for whatever reason, they don't ignore the walkers, but they don't have the same response. And I know you ride TriMet, and you can watch them.
Well, no, that's my point. On the buses, the lines that I ride, they tend to put the ramp down for the walkers. They don't get up to help the way they might with a wheelchair. But it's interesting. We'll find out the policy. I was just wondering, because there's different cultures on different rides, on different lines. Thank you.
Sure.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Gabriel Vaught. I'm speaking here not only on behalf of myself, but also on behalf of Sean Davis. I just had a couple of quick questions or comments based off of the Elders in Action Advocacy Group presentation here. The first that I was thinking about was a comment that was made regarding the elders being priced out of their homes, no cause evictions, that sort of thing. And I just really want to hope that these sorts of evictions and actions are something that are being undertaken or at least considered by City Council, if not currently, in the recent past. I don't know of any specific actions currently that are happening in this regard. I actually have a question. Is there an incentive plan for developers to create age-friendly housing within the city, as I see that our city is, you know, an age-friendly city? So I'm just kind of curious about that.
Good questions, both. When it comes to policy, Commissioner Saltzman has led the council in enacting some policy for protections of renters, longer notice periods. And then good question about whether we have employed incentives so far. We're actually talking about our incentives right now, so your timing is good.
Well, we have many incentives to, or requirements actually, that affordable units be suitable for people with disabilities, or can be retrofitted at some point in the future to be suitable for people with disabilities.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do you may or may not know, are these well known to the aged community?
To some people that develop that market of housing, yes, for some. But it sounds like we could do
I think
more.
One of the things you're probably getting at, sir, is that there are some threshold levels of accessibility that ought to be embedded in our building code regardless of who is served in the housing. I think that's where you're getting, and I think there's agreement up here that our code should reflect a minimum level of accessibility. And that's something that perhaps our friends through Age Friendly can help us with.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Anyone else want to speak on this item?
Mayor, I move to accept the report.
Then let's take a vote, please, to accept the report.
Thank you very much for the report and for all of your work on behalf of all of us. Most of us have the goal of becoming older on a daily basis. So I actually learned several things today, the most interesting to me being the reason for the change from elder-friendly to age-friendly. And I have been using the words age-friendly for some time and hadn't really understood the significance of that. So thank you for your work on behalf of everybody, and I appreciate Commissioner Fish for your ongoing advocacy on behalf of Elders in Action and our age-friendly community, and this report as well. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you for an excellent report, and thank you for the work that you do in our community. We're going to be more effective when we all link arms. You mentioned in your presentation the work the Attorney General is doing combating elder fraud. We know that the county is involved in, has a range of services they provide to older adults. We've got a housing piece. We can go on and on and on. But we want this to be a city that is welcoming to people of all ages. That means we want children to go play at playgrounds that are universally accessible, and we want older adults to be able to age with dignity in homes they can afford that are accessible. And I am so proud of the work you're doing and grateful for the service you're giving to our city. Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Thank you for the report, and keep up the good work. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you for the report. Thank you for your work. And I want to extend my thanks to AARP and Elders in Action in particular for their engagement on transportation issues in the past year plus. Aye.
Anything else?
Well, we have lots of mentors in how to grow older well, and we appreciate the good counsel and advice of Elders in Action, AARP. One of my personal role models is Bud Clark, with whom I get to go on a 30-mile bike ride every year. So I'm impressed by that. And I think the greatest sage on this subject, I'll take a role from Commissioner Novick, who's usually quoting music lyrics. Jimmy Buffett said, "I'm growing older, but not up. My metabolic rate is pleasantly stuck. So let the winds of change blow over my head. I'd rather die while I'm living than live while I'm dead." So I think that spirit of how to grow older gracefully should be with all of us, and with your good advice, more people in Portland will manage that. Thank you. Aye. Thanks very much. Good work. Okay.